You're listening to What She Said, a podcast about blogging, creativity and life online, hosted by me, Lucy Lucraft, a freelance journalist and blogger based in Brighton. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So, for anybody who doesn't know who you are, could you introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your career journey to date?
Yes. Where to start? So I am Emily Sharp on Instagram, Emily Frieda Sharp, and I am a filmmaker. I've been kind of freelancing for years, but in the last year or so I started working full-time at Whaler, which is an influencer marketing company, and I do all of their in-house content and videos. And then Instagram's just been my hobby for, I don't know, about 4 years now, although technically it's now my job. So I'm in that weird sort of limbo where it's like, yeah. Do I relax here or do I work here? that's pretty much it.
You make it sound really, really simple, but it's actually just a really fascinating career, because like you say, you're both an influencer. You create, photography content, and you also... Yeah. Work on the other side where you're helping create these amazing campaigns with Whaler, with influencers. I love that you straddle those both sides. Yeah.
I always describe it like, it feels like I've gone to Oz and looked behind the curtain. Like Dorothy. Yeah. It really does. It's so weird. I mean, I think it's a little bit easier for me because I don't actually work on the commercial like campaign side of things. Mm. I mean, I do because we're a tight knit group and we're all in the same office, but that's not my actual job. So we have got like lots of lovely, mostly we're actually pretty much a almost all female company. So we've got lots of lovely ladies who work on the campaigns, and some of them are influencers as well. So that definitely a very complicated for them. I work on like in-house content, so I guess that kind of keeps at least that like the content's still the kind of key thing. Yeah. That's at the heart of everything, so I guess it makes it a little bit less complicated, but yeah, it is weird, but it's cool.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the how did I describe it, influencer scene, and I actually meant the influencer landscape. Because yeah. Influencer scene, yeah, just sounds really cliquey and gross.
I know, it's really like MySpace.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say, I was talking to Barb, who is her internist, this morning, just about Instagram. Mm. And I don't know when that'll be released, but around the same time as yours. And we were talking about just how much, or actually when we were talking, it just really struck me how much the Instagram landscape has changed massively from certainly from when I started out as a blogger, but even when I started to take my Instagram seriously, which was only about a year, 18 months ago, maybe almost 2 years ago now. And we were saying how, well, let me rephrase that. And it made me think about the fact that an influencer didn't used to be just on Instagram. If you were an influencer, in fact, that's kind of a new word as well, isn't it? But it's certainly, yeah, it is, you wouldn't have imagined someone would make their entire living out of just Instagram and not even have a blog. That's such a new concept.
That's the thing, that we're all so tied to that one little app.
Mm. And I wondered, from your point of view, seeing it on the other side. Like what kind of trends are you seeing, and how is that landscape from your point of view from working with an influencer? And I know you don't do it directly, as in picking out influencers, but from your knowledge and expertise on the Whaler side, on agency side, how do you look at influencers and who's valuable and who is an up and coming person? And do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's, it's not a very well worded question.
No, it's like, it's more of just a topic for discussion. I think it really has changed. I mean, that's just so, I think we can all see that just in when we spend time on the app, just how like yeah, just how the whole landscape really has changed. But yeah, I mean, when I think about it, because I started, I think I got Instagram in, I know when I got Instagram, actually. It was on the 11th of September 2011, because Instagram, I've been like, one day at work, I was sort of just pottering around and looking at all the settings on Instagram. And you know, they keep a record of everything and you can access it, including the date you signed up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, I saw that date and I think I signed up at like 11:01 or something really weird. So it was like 11:11:11:11.
Wow.
It was really creepy. Yeah. But yeah, so I've been on Instagram since 2011. But I think I started taking it a bit more seriously in about 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. But I didn't take it seriously like as Instagram. It was just, well, I guess I did, because Instagram created that culture of just being a hobbyist photographer.
Mm.
And then it's so interesting as well to think about the fact that Instagram has like invented this new way of creating content where it's all about like the cohesion of content. I'm really not roundabout answering your question. I'm just sort of nattering away. But I was like yesterday or the day before, when was it? About 2 days ago, I was doing a workshop with one of the videographers that I work with. And he was teaching me how to color grade, and this is technically going somewhere, but basically we were watching a clip from The Theory of Everything, and he was talking about the way it was graded in different scenes. And when I was talking to him, I realized that I might spend so much time, and I've spent so many years sort of curating content on Instagram, but essentially what I've learned is a very specific skill, which is to create something that looks cohesive. So to replicate, make that same thing again and again. But when somebody's making a film, say, they'll grade each scene to be appropriate to whatever's happening in that scene. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So when we're all curating our grid to a certain aesthetic or whatever, actually what we've learned is that skill in and of itself that we can.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that, so yeah, firstly, there's that, which is the skill that we've all learned is like actually really quite an amazing skill. Mm. And that it's this really weird new niched thing that, yeah, you kind of have to cultivate when you get into Instagram. But also that it's something that's like really not applicable in many other like sort of visual outlets. Mm. Or kind of artistic outlets. I mean, I guess it is, though, to an extent, when you think of sort of Picasso or whatever. Mm. And they have their like signature style.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. It just struck me, and I think that's definitely something that, particularly since the algorithm, you know, the algorithm, that's become even more important. Because obviously, before we all used to talk about that top nine, you know, the importance of the top nine,
yeah,
and like being able to basically capture someone's attention and get them to follow you from that initial sort of preview. But now I think you sort of grab followers by riding an algorithm wave most of the time, and you ride that kind of algorithm wave by taking whatever picture it is that somehow basically just explodes and does, yeah, really well. So it really now is so much more about visual trends, I think.
Yeah, that was something that Barb's mentioned as well, because I think even when I started taking Instagram seriously, it was very much about the top nine and making sure that every picture that you posted matched an aesthetic that you wanted to portray.
Like your brand.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's really what it came down to. And I still subscribe to that kind of thinking in terms of I just really enjoy curating my grid. I really enjoy it. But it is now about being a step ahead. And not piggybacking on the trends, but yeah, like challenging yourself and getting out of your creative comfort zone.
Yeah.
And Bob was talking about the very strange, see, she's brilliant at this, but I just don't really get out of my Instagram echo chamber much. But she was talking about the whole movement of people who, I don't know, something to do with sounds and like,
oh, what, ASMR?
That, yeah. I'd never heard of it. I was like, what the hell is this?
I mean, I think ASMR is that specifically that thing of Whispering, is it?
Oh, is it Whispering? Yes, I read about this. There's a whole, there's loads of people doing that on YouTube, everywhere.
Yeah.
And just on the internet, which it's really creepy. I watched, in the show notes, I'll link to an episode of Explained on Netflix where they talk about it. It's like a 10-minute clip.
I love Explained.
It's so, so good.
I don't think I've watched the ASMR episode though, but I love Explained.
I think it actually is, the title is Whispering, and I think it might even be the first one, but I'll link to it in the show notes and I'll send it to you separately.
Yeah, do.
So let's go back to filmmaking, which is one of your amazing skill sets. I just do not, I'm so in awe of people that can edit a film. I can't edit anything. It's terrible. I hate it.
You edit this podcast? Or I hope you do, because I'm making some really rambly answers.
I actually have an editor now who does it for me, but up until this season, I edited everything myself. But audio is so much easier to edit. Video is so hard. And also, you know, it's not just about editing. I can certainly stick something in iMovie and clip out the errors. But you make amazing, you make films, which is completely different. Completely different. I find it so hard. Tori, Unfold the Day. Oh, no, she's not Unfold the Day anymore. Tori, The Stories of Tori. She is brilliant at video content.
Is she? I need to catch some of that.
Yeah, have a look at her. She does a lot of little IGTVs, and I think she might even be on YouTube now, but even just in her stories, she's so creative. I don't think she even thinks she is, but do have a look at her. What are your best tips?
Oh, tips for filmmaking?
But really, you know, simple tips for somebody like me who, because I find it super overwhelming, the thought of IGTV or YouTube or anything, but everybody knows that video content is important.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good question. I guess it depends. Wow, yeah, I've never really thought of it like that, because I guess it depends on what you know, what's compelling you to make video content, because I suppose we're also used to this thing of Instagram having normalized, or not normalized, but like popularized, just being a photographer or being into photography. But obviously, because it's not a video platform, or it's not a video platform first, although it's becoming far, far more video based now, particularly obviously with stories. But I guess I haven't really thought of, because I'm really rambling.
No, it's fine.
I suppose when I never like thought, I knew I wanted to work in film when I was in sixth form, so at that 16, 17, 18 age, and then I left school at 18 to sort of go and do that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really, obviously, had no idea how, and I still have no idea how that all worked out. It's definitely, I know it's like such a cliche, but it's definitely one of those, like, I really don't know how I got here. Because I know that all kind of career journeys or any kind of like, yeah, personal progress is there's never like a linear path, but particularly with something as like, often with creative industries, but particularly with something as like, there aren't as, or at least traditionally there haven't been as many avenues into filmmaking. So it's definitely something that I think still has a higher bar for entry.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, definitely.
I don't mean that as in like, you need to be really good at it to do it from the off. I mean, it's just something that's less like normalized in those commas, in the same way that kind of Instagram and photography is. But in terms of tips,
Like, do you start off with, so the sort of things that I create, the content that I create, and I want to create some more IGTVs on specific topics around, helping people live a more sustainable life that's fun, because I never want to be preachy, or for example vegan tips. I get a lot of questions about vegan recipes, and I have never written about recipes because I hate food photography, but it would lend itself quite well to an IGTV. Now, what the barrier for me is I don't know what angle to film it from. How do you, should I make it not one long, boring, rambling clip? Or should I break it up with some, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So how would you go about?
I guess, so if you're making content that's very much, it's more topic based, I guess, rather than, what I'm getting at is it's not just like a holiday video, like
yes,
this is how pretty my holiday was, say. So if that's the kind of video content you're making, I think, firstly, just as like a housekeeping tip, definitely put subtitles on, not just so that it's something that everybody can enjoy, regardless of, you know, whether they can hear it, you know, lower, but also because often in situations, we all know that, like, you know, you might be flicking through your phone at work and, you know, so you've not got the audio on. So definitely put captions on. And it depends on what you're using to edit. I don't know if there are any, maybe I can look it up and we can put it in show notes if there are any good apps like for putting captions onto videos, like in your phone. But otherwise, I know that iMovie definitely has that. You can just like put those text boxes over the top and just overlay them, type in what's being said. And then I'd say that in terms of like not wanting it to be, you know, wanting it to be at least like visually engaging, avoiding like a static shot is always nice. But there's nothing, you know, there's something to be said for not kind of overcomplicating it too much.
Mm.
So I guess I think from my point of view, a lot of it is, ironically, I think I'm more interested in editing, even though I've kind of like come at it from that, like, I take all my content for Instagram, but I don't actually often, when I make films, particularly at work, I don't actually personally do the video, like do the filming.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been something that I've embraced in the last like year or so more. Because I think when you're a freelancer in a creative industry, you feel really like you need to be a jack of all trades. And kind of, I guess, in the same way that you've got somebody editing the podcast now, it's like, know your weaknesses or know what you enjoy more, or what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And I definitely don't dislike doing the sort of the video work, you know, the camera operating. But I've never sort of had a real flair for it or even like as much of a passion for it. Which is weird. I still find that weird because I'm obsessed with like Instagram and photography. So it's slightly counterintuitive, but so I'd say when it comes to editing something, I'd just get your static shot, say, if you're doing this kind of like using the example of the vegan, maybe like tutorial on sort of cooking something, get your static shot where you can speed it up and slow it down depending on what part of the process you're going through, and just try and, like, actually the better thing to do, because it'd be more fun to edit with, is just to keep the shot identical, and then you can make fun jump cuts and like have things appear, say, like if you literally got your phone and like rested it up against the wall, you could film yourself making something, but you could even like play around with, you know, you name an ingredient and then you to the camera, say, and then you go off and grab it, and then just in the jump cut, the ingredient appears. Does that make sense?
Oh, I see what you mean. So you wouldn't necessarily stop the filming and then go and get the thing. You would leave it running the whole time.
Yeah.
And then when you edit it, you can speed it up so it looks like the ingredient has just appeared.
Or when you edit it, you just cut out the middle bit. Cut out that middle bit because the key is just don't touch the camera and then the shot won't change. So it will just jump it, like it'll pop almost as if it's popped in.
Oh, I love that idea.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and it's totally. Just like, I mean, I'm just making it up as I go along, but like that's like definitely an easy way of, like, it's minimal effort in terms of like camera angles and setup and this, that, and the other. But like, again, like I think it comes back to the thing of, I definitely do find editing a lot, like I'm a lot more interested in it. But like, you can do that kind of thing once you've got that static shot in the edit. You can do sort of, you can play around, do silly fun things like that, and also get so do that static shot, and then I would once I've got all the bulk, I would then go and get cutaways. So I'd pick up the phone, so say I'd film solidly for however long it takes, like 10-20 minutes to do the whole thing from start to finish, and then once the whole thing was captured, pick up the phone, move it for the first time, say, or whatever, or pick up the camera, depending on what you're using, and then go and get little close-ups and cutaways of the process. And then you can maybe even, like, I think structuring a video, there should be a sort of, like, a peak in the middle, which you're kind of building up to, where maybe, you know, the music can get more interesting, or whatever's happening on camera, on screen, can get a bit more visually exciting. So that's where you could do like a montage of like cutaways. So those would be little shots of like maybe a spoon stirring whatever it is you're making, or pasta falling out of a packet onto the table, you know.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Oh, I love these tips. Yeah. They're just really good.
Made up. But I guess it's just thinking about it like, don't overcomplicate it, and don't get too caught up in, you know, what's the best, should I be doing a wide shot, a close up, like, you know, none of those really technical things. I don't know. I don't think about them. So.
I think
that's because my videographer does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But when you create, thinking about you as an influencer, when you create content for your Instagram, do you think about, do you curate your grid? I mean, I guess you don't really, because you've got a very specific style and it's probably just second nature. Do you think about, do you start with the end in mind?
I'm really not. Yeah, that does make sense. But I think I might have in the past put more time into curating my grid, but it's something that I've been doing for so long now. Like you say, it's kind of second nature. Mm. And also it's kind of like, I'm not in like a sort of I don't care about it way, but in like, I really, the legwork's kind of been done.
Yeah.
So I'm very practiced at like getting, you know, seeing an image or finding an image or making an image that fits with the grid. I it would be kind of counterintuitive to make content that wouldn't, I guess, because I'm so like programmed to do it now. And then in terms of like grid planning, I'm not a big grid planner. That sounds really bad. I'm like, I definitely put effort into my Instagram, I promise, guys. I think it's really, really cool though when people do. And I suppose, actually thinking about it, I do, because I do it for my job at Whaler. I do Whaler's Instagram, and I pre-plan that. Like, I've got every piece of content planned for November, and in theory, I should be planning December. So I think, again, it's like, it's part and parcel of that now being my day job as well, that maybe I've stepped back a bit from, you know, I think I approach Instagram, like my own Instagram, with a lot more kind of just try to be a bit more relaxed about it. And, not relaxed, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I think relaxed is a good thing. It doesn't mean unprofessional, does it? I think that's appropriate, completely appropriate, because you've been doing it for such a long time now. And I do think that there's something to be said for just doing what feels natural to you. I still have a lot of self-doubt but also enjoy the process. So I still very much plan my grid out. But I also hold it quite lightly. I don't really worry too much about what I'm posting.
And like you say, you enjoy the process.
Yeah.
So that's essentially should be the driver.
Yes.
And I definitely know that in the past I've grid planned a lot more.
Yeah.
Now I think I've got to the point where I'm a little bit looser with it.
What would you say from your experience as an influencer and working with brands, because you were a Whaler influencer, you were on their books, as it were, before you were working for them as one of the team.
Yeah.
In your experience, what would you say are the best ways for people to let me try and reword this a bit better. For somebody like somebody starting out on Instagram, taking it seriously with a beautiful, beautiful photography, great engagement. And I'm thinking about some of the people that I follow who have like 1,500 followers, 2,000 followers, whatever. Mm. You know, I don't have very many, but there are people who have less who are much, much better than me.
Yeah.
But who offer a lot of value to a brand, but obviously they're never going to be able to, well, not never, they're not going to be able to work for agencies like Waylar because there's limits and it would be ridiculous to have zero limits. What would you say are the best ways to, I guess, show your worth and also, and work with brands and start monetizing?
Well, I think that this is like essentially part of a really important question for the industry. I think it boils down to how much we value the account and its engagement versus the content itself. And so I guess by that I mean like I'd be interested to know or to see if things shift to a sort of dialogue where we talk more about a base rate that's set for your content creation, as in for the quality of images or photography or video or whatever it is you're doing for the brand, and then you add on the influence.
Right, yes, yeah. I think that would be a really interesting model. It would democratize a lot more.
I think so. Mm. I mean, again, don't quote me on this because I'm just making it up as I go along. But that would be interesting because I think I know that from working at Waylar, we definitely are beginning to, in the last year or so, there's been much more of a sort of proliferation of kind of content-only campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So that is essentially where brands are paying influencers to create content for them that the influencers have no obligation to share on their platforms. Therefore, they're not actually using them as influencers. They're using them as content creators.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason for that is because brands want content that will work well on Instagram, and who better to go to than people who know how to make content that does well on Instagram.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that has kind of just started to appear and become so much more of a thing with a lot of the campaigns we do. So yeah, I'd be interested if we do ever get to a point as an industry, not just as Waylar, where we start thinking about it as, well, here's, you know, what's your base rate for your content? Because, you know, I think of influencers that I know or Instagrammers. I don't know, what do we call it? What do we call ourselves? I think of ones, photographers that I know who are freelance photographers outside of Instagram. Mm. So they know how to. I was actually chatting to Hannah Bullivant about this a few weeks ago because I filmed with her for an object project, one of the hashtag projects I do with Waylar, for anybody who doesn't. No, and we were chatting about the age old thing of how do you know what to charge, and we ended up sort of hitting on the fact that I think people who are freelancers or have been freelancers before, they definitely just have, they're just ahead of the game when it comes to knowing how to price their work.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because she was saying, it really is a skill, and like again, it ties into that thing that we were chatting about before, just before, where we were talking about, you know, knowing how much your work and your time is worth.
Yeah.
But also, in the context of charity things as well, like we were chatting about before, it's just difficult. It's such a hard thing, that thing of valuing yourself. But yeah, I think for these smaller accounts, I know that Waylar, when I signed up, I signed up 3 years ago now. It was like a really, I always think of it as like, you know, Mahabis slippers.
I have them.
It's such a weird one, but I've still got my pair of these slippers, and essentially they're the reason why I have the job I've got today. It's like a really weird, like roundabout way of looking at it, but it's definitely true because they approached me on Instagram. Actually, the longer version of the story is that Harrison, my boyfriend, his mum bought him a pair of these beautiful slippers for Christmas a few years ago, about, it must be like 3 or 4 years ago now. And I was so jealous. I really, really, really wanted a pair. And I made that very known. And I followed Habit on Instagram. And I saw all these people doing, like, you know, the beginnings of, I wouldn't have called it like influence marketing because I don't think it even properly existed in, like, or it did, but it wasn't something we really, really all knew about. I think I would have probably just thought that it was like a gifted situation, kind of. Because I remember when, like, the only people who did anything that vaguely resembled influencer marketing were, you know, like me and Orla and Hannah Argyle and people like that, who were bigger, much bigger earlier on, and they were doing these kind of, like, and it was all like on a one-to-one basis with the brands. And I saw that Mahabis were doing like a whole kind of Insta drive, and I followed them. And then they asked, weirdly enough, they approached me to share and said, can we share a picture of yours on our feed? It was just a picture of like the sea in Ireland or something. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then that started a conversation where they said, oh, would you like to do a campaign with us? And I was like, definitely yes. I'll do it for free. I just want to do it. It was like so keen. And I mean, disclaimer, they did pay me, obviously. They're not like, you know, they weren't not paying people for their work. But they basically said, if you want to do it, we work through Whaler, because they'd obviously, they were one of the first brands that was doing it that decided to use a platform to streamline the process. And interestingly, I don't know if you know this, but Whaler actually started because the two co-founders of Whaler had a watch company that was a bit like Daniel Wellington.
No way. Oh my goodness, I did not know that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That thing of like an Insta watch company. You
know? Yeah.
Their biggest like way of, I believe like the way the watch, the whole like marketing plan for the watch was basically Instagram. And so they did that, and then they were like, hey, we're like the more valuable thing we're doing, like, or, you know, something that's clearly got value in it is this thing of doing influencer marketing campaigns. So we should turn what we already do as our own like watch marketing structure into a company in itself. So that's how they started. But anyway, Mahabis approached me to do this thing. They were like, you've got to sign up to Whaler to do it. So I signed up to Whaler, and yeah, 3 years later, I worked there. I don't know where this is going.
We were talking about like influencer marketing, but actually what struck me when you were talking is that I would love to briefly chat about, I've got a bit of an echo. Hang on. I think it's gone. Yeah. So I would love to briefly talk about what we were talking about offline before we started recording, which was about the fact that when you have, there's a conversation around money that's happening, which is really, really great. And it's so important for content creators to value themselves and their work, and to be charged for their work, to be paid for their work properly, to be compensated properly. Yeah. However, I think there's something that is getting a little bit lost in it, and I think it's a real shame, which is that sometimes it's good to listen to your gut and your intuition, and not to feel ashamed if, for example, and I personally am very much of the opinion that if something is of value to you, then it's a value, and you don't have to justify why you've accepted a watch as payment for your content creation, if that's of value to you. Where it's not okay is if you know, people aren't paying you for your work and you want them to pay, you know, you've asked for a fee and they've shamed you into, you know, whatever. And what's not okay is the kind of wall of silence that sometimes happens, where brands play influencers off against each other and don't pay them fairly and expect you to all keep silent. However, I think if something, you know, there's some really important conversations happening on Instagram, as well as some of the horrible conversations that are happening on Instagram as well. Because I say this from my echo chamber of where I only see what I want to see, which is all quite nice. But there's some really important conversations happening around ethics and climate change and sustainability and living plastic free and living more low impact. If, for example, there was a way that I could support a brand. In fact, I am supporting a brand and I'm not being paid for it. It's going to be a gifted collaboration because I really want to share them with the people who follow me. And I know it's going to do something impactful. Now, they're not a charity, they're a brand. So they have a budget. It's a very small budget. And I'm okay with that. It's not a problem for me. Mm. And you know what? It's not my full-time job. So I'm in a very privileged position where,
It's the bottom, like you said, the bottom line is that thing of, do you feel valued?
Mm.
And if you feel valued in the situation, then that's all that matters. You know, I guess it also brings back that thing of, you know, you don't just have to be gaining financial reimbursement from something.
Mm.
I know that's quite like, again, like you say, you can, you know, that comes from a privileged place, being able to say that. But
yeah,
I think when
we're both compensated, we should add a disclaimer that we're both compensated for our work outside of Instagram. So yeah, we don't pay our rent or mortgage, whatever, through Instagram. So it's completely understandable if that is your only way of paying your bills, that it's a harder decision to make. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, totally. That's a really good disclaimer. I think it's one of those things where you have to remember that, because we're like, in this context, I think we're beginning to talk more about the sort of like bigger accounts who are paid, like you say, paying the mortgage or the rent or whatever through the work they do on Instagram. And you think of it, I guess the funny thing is, because of that whole kind of like Insta influencer culture of like, you know, the couple that seems to endlessly backpack and, you know, all that kind of whatever, that cliche. You think of somebody who's got a big following on Instagram, who's earning off of it with brands, you think of it as very glamorous and it's very like highly compensated, financially compensated, which it is, but you forget that Instagram's their full-time job, and so it pays the bills, pays the mortgage. So they're being paid really well for it, and that's great, and they are privileged, and they are very lucky to be able to make a living doing that. But it is still there. It's still them making a living. They're not making like the extra fun stuff money. You know what I mean? Like there's not some other job that they're doing in the background that pays the bills and the mortgage, etc. And all the Instagram collaborations just there for fun. It is really serious, you know, yeah.
But I do think that,
sorry,
all of us, no, sorry, I interrupted you. I do think that all of us, especially those of us who are privileged and who are me and you, I don't want to presume the environment that you're in, but I know that I'm in a pretty safe environment in that I can advocate for other people. And I think whether Instagram is your full-time job or not, I don't think it's okay to sit back and say nothing on important matters, if those matters are important to you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, don't say them in DMs. and then not say them on your grid.
Yeah, absolutely.
And support the brands that and causes.
I think it comes back to, again, it is so interesting what you say, this thing of, I don't want to, God, I'm gonna sound like the worst person in the world, but I don't want to like put a downer on the whole like this sort of how do we describe it, that this kind of
the influencer landscape.
No, not the the thing of this sort of very hot topic of like, you know, you've got to charge your worth.
Right. Yes.
I really don't want to be like, you know, some misery guts about it, or like put a downer on it. But I definitely think that it was really interesting what you said when we were chatting before about the fact that maybe it has yes, it's done a lot of good, but it basically means that that's essentially what's at the back of people's minds at all times.
Yeah.
And so, like you say, when a collaboration or an opportunity comes along with a brand or a charity or whatever for a cause that's like just really fitting and really appropriate, say, for you and your values and your beliefs, and you've got a platform to share that on, it's a shame to think that the one thing that's stopping you is this sense of But I should know my worth, and I should be being paid what I'm supposed to, because it's now been so drummed into us like this. And again, it's that catch 22 of like, I don't want to say that, you know, it's only a good thing that we're all learning to value ourselves more, but maybe that's another conversation to add to, you know, maybe we need to start a new conversation, a new strand of that conversation, which is, yeah, definitely know your worth, value, and like, and value your work. But let's talk about the nuances of that.
Yes, that's a really good way of putting it, and probably a perfect place to end this conversation on. So thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Where can everybody find you online?
I am one of those, like you said, Instagrammers that doesn't actually even have a blog. so you can literally find me on Instagram. My Instagram username is literally my full name, so it's Emily Frieda Sharp. Because there is another Emily Frieda and there are loads of other Emily Sharps. So what are you gonna do? And where else?
Twitter?
Twitter, yeah, exactly the same username on Twitter, although I'm quite crap at Twitter, but I'll, you know, if you tweet me, I'll tweet back. Instagram's mostly where I am, so yeah, like, come say hi. And also, obviously I work at Whaler, so if you have any Whaler related questions, it's 90% of the time it's me in the inbox, so yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I often, like, forget, you know, I'll be, you know, like, Ridder or something will and I'll be like, hey, and then she's like, what, why is Whaler sending me love hearts and saying, hey, or, you know, whoever it is, I've done that too, sorry to everybody I've done that too. Anyway.
And you can find me at Lucy Lucroft everywhere, but I mostly hang out on Instagram. You can find old episodes of What She Said over at lucylucroft.com, where you'll also find me chatting about all things blogging, travel, vegan life, and zero waste living too. Lastly, I know everybody asks this and it's a total pain in the ass, but please think about leaving the show a rating and review. It makes a huge difference to getting the show out to new listeners. And for every review you leave, I'll donate £2 to charity. So that's £1 for you and £1 from me. The chosen charity changes each month, so listen out for it in the intro each week. Thanks for listening.